A number of years ago, nearly 20 in fact, my stepmom decided to take up archery, or more specifically, bow hunting. Bow hunting has always been one of my dad's biggest passions, and her reasoning was that it would allow them to spend more time together. So Dad helped her to buy a bow, got it set up, and showed her how to shoot. He spent a lot of time talking about ethical shots and where to aim on a deer. She's not that fond of heights, so he made her a special tree stand to make her feel more comfortable while on stand, and bought little radios so she could communicate with him if she needed to while they were out hunting. Over the course of a summer of practice, she became fairly proficient out to about 20 yards, more than ample to harvest a deer. So it came as no real surprise when she did in fact kill a nice fat doe that fall. However, the details of how she got it were a bit unique. Oh, and she didn't have to look far to find it. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Friends of my dad called Judy's deer her unicorn. They called it that because she hit it in the middle of the forehead, just above the eye line, and dropped it like a bag of bricks in its tracks. How exactly she achieved penetration to the brain with a 40-pound bow is something of a minor miracle. She wasn't trying to hit it in the noggin. She aimed for the rib cage, and at the last moment the doe reached back with her head to gnaw at a niche on her side, and took an arrow to the head instead. I bring this up because fall hunting season is upon us. A lot of folks will be trying to put meat in the freezer in the coming weeks with big game animals, whether caribou, moose, or bear. There are many elements that go into a successful hunt. One of them is clearly illustrated in the story I just shared about my stepmom, finding the animal after the shot. My stepmom's first deer was an easy one, with no tracking or trailing. But that's not normally how it works, at least not with bows. And perhaps that's the first thing to consider today, gun or bow. My guess is that it's a very, very high percentage of area hunters that hunt with firearms, probably something in the high 90s, though that is just a guess. A rifle bullet kills an animal through massive tissue damage, disruption of vital organ function or of the central nervous system, blood loss, and or shock. Death may be instantaneous or require tracking, depending on a whole host of circumstances. An arrow, on the other hand, is a different game entirely, with the arrow having only a small fraction of the kinetic energy of a large caliber bullet. Arrows can't smash through bones like bullets, and arrows can't deliver the massive instantaneous shock to an animal like bullets can. Modern arrows are tipped with razor-sharp broadheads, and they are designed to penetrate deeply and kill an animal through cutting. The best way for this to happen is through a well-placed arrow that slices through a vital organ, causing fairly quick organ failure and massive hemorrhage. I'm talking about the heart and lungs here, and death is very, very quick for such a hit. For both rifle and bow, shot placement is absolutely critical. This program is not long enough to do justice to a discussion of proper shot placement, and such a discussion branches in large part based on whether you're hunting with a rifle or bow. A rifle presents more potential shots due to the way it kills and the range it's able to do that at. A bow, even for those with superior ability, is inarguably a very close-range weapon, though every bit as deadly. With that in mind, I'm not going to go into a drawn-out discussion about just what constitutes good shot placement as it pertains to firearms. That's because there are so many variables that come into play, including hunt circumstances, the weather for example, time of day, status of the animal, size of the animal, range, and shooting ability of the hunter, to name a few. With a bow, it's a much more limited offering. Some folks may argue with this, but the only really good shot with a bow is broadside or slightly quartering away, with the shot behind the front leg designed to hit both lungs, the heart, or both. I assure you, that's what my stepmom was striving for. So, let's assume for a moment that regardless of your weapon, you've made a good solid hit to a vital area. Now what? If the animal drops in sight, well, then tracking's a non-issue. But it's certainly not uncommon for the animal to travel a distance after the shot, and this sometimes takes it out of sight. Now it's up to you to find it. Blood trailing is a skill that every hunter should work at mastering. If you hunt enough, there will come a time, probably multiple times, whether for yourself or friends, that trailing is needed. While blood trailing is far from an exact science, anyone can learn and become proficient at it. My dad was perhaps the best I've ever seen, and I can't tell you how many deer he helped friends recover long after they had given up on it. It just takes a bit of careful thought before, during, and after the shot. common sense and a calm, deliberate approach will go a long way toward a successful recovery. Experience is invaluable. If you have a chance to spend some time in the company of experienced friends, jump on the opportunity. To begin with, know where the animal was when you shot. Make a point of noticing details about the precise shot location during and after the shot. You can often tell a lot about the nature of the hit from what you find at the spot of the hit, but first you have to be able to find that spot. I often pick out a tree or bush that's distinct, note where the animal is in relation to it, and burn that into my mind. Next, remember how the animal was standing when you hit it. Was it relaxed or alert? Also, where exactly did you hit it? What was its reaction to the hit? Again, if it drops like a bag of bricks, you're good to go. But that doesn't always happen. Watch carefully as the animal leaves the immediate area, if it leaves. It's likely to happen fast, but try to freeze as many details as possible, including travel route, direction of travel, and where you eventually lose sight of it. For a bow hunter, you want to note if the arrow is still in the animal or was it a complete pass-through. After the shot and after the animal departs, it's time to check the spot of the hit for clues. What you find there can help you determine what type of hit you're working with. It's best to let things quiet down after the shot for 10 minutes or so before approaching the spot, at least as long as conditions allow. If a storm is bearing down on you or there is some other compelling reason, then picking up the trail sooner rather than later might be a good idea. Quiet is always a good approach. The animal might not have went far, and there's no need to do anything to push it. Blood type can tell you a lot about the hit. For example, a lot of bright red blood can indicate a heart or lung shot, a very good thing to see. On the other hand, dark red blood can indicate a liver hit. Sparse blood that's watery or even has a greenish tint and a foul smell indicates a gut hit. Blood color and amount, combined with other clues like hair type, can tell you where the animal was likely hit, which in turn can tell you how you need to proceed. Again, for rifle hunters, this may be a non-issue. If the animal's in any kind of open area at all, follow-up shots can make a trailing job unnecessary. But some shot opportunities come at the edges of heavy cover, and even well-hit animals shot by rifles can require trailing. Once you've examined the site, you need to decide how to proceed. As someone who used to bow hunt a lot, the rule of thumb was always to wait at least 30 minutes, even on a solid heart or lung shot. Conversely, a gut-hit animal is usually given several hours or more before trailing. There is no hard and fast rule, and specific hunt conditions may dictate to you what you need to do. Once you begin trailing, it's a good idea to mark your trail periodically as you go. This helps you to reset to the correct spot if you guess a wrong pathway. Markers can also help establish a travel route pattern, which may be helpful in deciding how to proceed. Toilet paper and surveyor's tape are old standbys for markers, though remember to pick them up afterwards. Other advice I would pass along is to be incredibly patient. Take your time. I cannot emphasize that enough. Try to stay off the exact trail, staying to one side, so you can go back and re-examine clues if you need to. Having a second set of eyes isn't a bad idea, but for blood trailing, too many cooks can definitely spoil the broth. Clues can be fragile. Too many feet can make those go away really quickly. Don't be afraid to drop to your hands and knees to look for clues. Sometimes a blood trail will become mere droplets in places. Many's the time I've seen my dad down close to the ground to maintain a trail, and I've done it more than once myself. It's often helpful to look at the vegetation from multiple angles. And sometimes there won't be a blood trail to trail. I once shot a black bear on the side of a mountain and lost sight of him as he barreled downhill. It began raining heavily after the shot, and a close examination of the spot revealed not a single drop of blood. I eventually began a circular route expanding outward as I went, not unlike the beginning of the yellow brick road in The Wizard of Oz. Some 60 or so yards from the spot of the shot, I stepped over my heart-shot bear, where he laid in a shallow gully, without a drop of blood around him. By the way, my stepmom shot a second deer the next season. She got nervous and hit it high. The arrow hit the spine, and it dropped the deer in its tracks. I guess some people just manage to have shorter trailing jobs than others. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.